The king was like his driftwood throne, ancient and discolored and lashed together with bits of rope. His skin was wrinkled and peeling, and his colorless hair hung lank over his shoulder in one matted lock. His clothes, all silks and furs pinched from merchant stalls by his beloved foundlings, were stained and rotting, and his gnarled fingers glittered with gold. The rotted stumps of his teeth were bared, and he was wearing a crown. What's up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode. Where we last left off, Lee and Hatha make a plan to sneak into the Edge unseen by crawling through the sewer tunnels below the city. If you missed last episode or any other, I will have a link to the full playlist down in the episode description, along with a couple of recap videos just to give you a sense of where we are in the story. All right, that is enough from me. Let's get down to the good stuff. I'm Josh Call, and this is Last Coliseum. Lee's heart hammered in his throat as the echo of the brawler's name rumbled through the Undercity. He almost shouted it again, but he caught himself. It was impossible that Hatham hadn't heard him yell, along with everything else that crawled below. If he didn't call back, it had to be because he couldn't respond. They'd found him already. That low, unshakable feeling of doom, of trespass, that had been pricking the underside of his consciousness like a pebble in his shoe, seized his heart in its vice grip and squeezed. He cursed himself for letting himself lose the brawler. He should have been leading Hatham along by the hand like a child through the sanctuary square on the way to the mass. Instead, he'd been busily reacquainting himself with his old friends, Dust and Shadow, digging up forgotten maps of the Undercity buried in the low parts of his mind, and populating the dark with monsters from his memory. His mind was racing. On his palm, he traced with his fingertip the half-remembered route to the Ragged King's Hall. They'd bring the brawler before the magpie, he reckoned. The Reaper was an interloper, yes, but that made him a curiosity. He pushed down the thought that fluttered up that the magpie might decide to cut off the brawler's wings as a prize. If he found Lee beneath the Edge, he'd promise to do worse. If he could just get down there, he could wait until they were all asleep. Something breathed. Lee's hackles rose, and his stomach knotted. He could feel eyes on him in the pitch dark, not really seeing, but keenly aware of his presence all the same. The foundlings all learned the Undercity by touch and sound. There was a time when Lee could tap the wall and know by the echo whether someone was standing in the tunnel 30 paces out. He'd prayed from the moment he'd first seen the black tunnel above the dunghill that they would pass beneath the magpie's magic eye unseen. He should have known better than to try. There was only one god below the city. He slipped his hand behind his back and touched the Kadari's knife in his waistband. He'd make them gut him in the tunnel before he'd let the magpie do what he'd promised. The gutter tongue of the foundlings tasted foreign in his mouth. "Killy, killy, getty do now," he spat, slipping the knife into his hand, the blade tucked against his forearm. "Winnie go go." The magpie had taught them all his crude cant. It was one way among many that he kept his foundlings close. By keeping the up above alien and unintelligible, he could keep them afraid of it. What Lee had said was, roughly, "If you're going to kill me, get on with it. I won't go back." He kept his voice low enough not to echo, and uncertainty prickled on the nape of his neck when it was met by silence. He swallowed, his spit squelching between his teeth. "You shouldn't have come," the darkness told him in the gutter tongue. "You know what he said he'd do." Lee's heart thudded. The voice was soft, barely a whisper, and thick with judgment. His free hand crept instinctively to the raised line of the scar on the bottom of his cheek, his parting gift from the Mad King. "I remember," he murmured. "I'm not afraid of him anymore." The darkness didn't answer, and Lee inched forward one silent step. "Which one are you?" The foundling didn't respond, and Lee kept his ears pricked for the sound of it moving forward or back. A hand pressed into the hollow of his chest, and immediately he bulled into it, slapping the hand away as he lunged with the knife. The foundling was smaller than he expected, and he shoved it up against the wall and touched the curved blade to its throat, his breath hissing through his teeth. The creature's frame was small and bony, and its heart fluttered against the blade of his forearm, pinning it to the wall. It had breasts. He blinked, as much from surprise as from her breath on his face.
Kiniam geri, princi.
She said it with just enough voice to give away her sex, still soft enough not to echo. Did you forget me, little prince? His mouth went dry.
No,
he heard himself murmur. He couldn't believe it. She was invisible but for the hard knobs of her shoulders and her shirt's coarse fabric under his forearm. But what he saw on the darkness was the girl he remembered, 13 or 14, with wild hair and chestnut skin and eyes that were at once strong and proud and sometimes mischievous when the mood struck her. His cat's eye queen.
Vanna,
he breathed. He took the knife away. It was only then that he felt the prick on his belly of the needle-sharp steel sliver she held pointed up toward his heart.
You're still his.
He didn't realize that he'd switched from the gutter tongue until she answered in the vulgar.
We couldn't all run away, she said.
She did not take her own weapon away from his stomach until he withdrew and backed 3 paces down the tunnel.
Not like you, but we did.
It all came flooding back at once, their flight through the tunnels, the blackcurrant wine, the green glass totem with a secret tucked inside. Feeling her breath on his neck, holding each other with a childish innocence that didn't press for more.
We were out.
He hated how pitiful his own voice sounded.
I thought you knew. I thought you saw through him.
How could I run?
She whispered.
And leave the others behind. You hated him more than you loved us. That's not true, but I didn't.
Her voice had risen. This last struck him like a slap and reverberated down the tunnel behind him.
They're my family, Vanna said,
then added softly,
so is he.
He remembered crawling out of the Undercity after his last audience with the old man, his face crusted with blood, his hair matted with spit from the other foundlings. His magic eye had followed him for weeks after. It had been days before he could sleep more than an hour at a stretch. Months before he turned up on Paul's doorstep, hungry and flea-ridden and blazing with fever.
He's the devil,
Lee whispered into the darkness.
He's all we have.
She had up till now not moved. Now a finger jabbed him hard in the middle of his chest.
You would have let us freeze and starve up above, Princey. He's given us a home.
That's not true. I'm here, aren't I? There's a place up there I can show you. There's an old woman who takes in runaways. She feeds them and clothes them, and
we have food. We take care of each other.
Lee grit his teeth. Leaving had been the hardest thing he'd ever done after Cat's Eye had crawled back. He'd given his back to the only family he'd ever known. There was never quite enough food in the Undercity, and they all had to tread carefully around the old man for fear of provoking one of his legendary rages, but it was his. And he'd traded it for the bitter cold and near starvation in those first months. Despite the nightmares and the magpie's threats, he was ashamed to admit that he'd dreamt about going back. And he almost did, more than once. In that way and others, meeting Paul had saved his life.
You'll see, Vanna murmured. He'll be pleased to have you.
His heart thudded.
No, Vanna.
He reached a hand for her, but she wasn't there.
He doesn't need to know. You can let us go. We're just passing through.
He already knows. The walls are listening. You know that.
He did. Remembering it made him shudder. It was as if the old man's eldritch gaze could pierce through stone. Nothing happened beneath the edge that he didn't know about. He remembered thinking as a little boy that his father could hear the very thoughts in his head. The old man did nothing to disabuse him or anyone of the idea.
You lied,
whispered Cat's Eye.
I didn't. You said you're not afraid.
His pulse was thudding in his ears. He realized that his whole body was tensed like a taut bowstring.
You should be.
She dragged the edge of her needle along the tunnel wall. The screech of steel on stone made goose flesh rise on Lee's arms.
I could have killed you in the dark, you know. You and the big man. Cut your throats before you could think.
Lee swallowed.
Why didn't you? He wants to speak to you. To see what up above has turned you into.
Her voice was moving as she padded silently through the tunnel, and she murmured,
Me think Gunny Soft Soft, little brother.
His neck and chest were slick with sweat, and he felt her breath as she drew in close. She put her arm on his shoulder, and his hand slipped around her waist. It was only then that he felt her needle prick the back of his neck.
I'll let you choose.
She breathed, soft enough for not even the walls to hear.
Stand and face him, or I can bring you back in pieces.
He hesitated. The knife was still in his hand, but he barely considered it. He wasn't a killer, certainly not of his cat's eye. She wasn't his anymore, but it was still Vanna. He was bigger than her and stronger. Growing up, she'd always had a year or two of growth on him, but time had made him long and wiry. If he could knock her in the mud faster than she could stick him, he could be 10 paces down the passage before she had the chance to give chase. And then what? She knew the Undercity better than he did. There was no way to know which of the tunnels that he still remembered had been blocked by debris or caved in the years since he'd left. Did he really think he could make it cityside before she and the other foundlings ran him down? And even if he could, it would mean leaving Haytham behind. They'd tear him apart. He'd seen them do it. And even if the brawler somehow got away, those clouds outside had been heavy an hour ago. If they broke while either of them was still underground, they'd be swept away. He'd decided on the Hinter before he jumped in the river after him. He wouldn't leave the brawler behind. Win or lose, they were in it together.
I'll stand, he told her. Take me home.
The wild tangle of her hair grazed his chin as she nodded. She pulled away, tracing his neck with the side of her steel splinter. She took her hand in his and pulled him into the dark. She led him down the twisting passages, gliding silently along the slick stone like a phantom with the thief plodding after her. He tried to ask her questions about the brawler, the foundlings, the king, but her answers quickly lapsed into curt replies in the gutter tongue, and then not even that. He wondered if the old man knew that she spoke the language of men. It had been Vanna who first taught him the vulgar. That had been their first shared trespass, for the old man would have beaten them both with a switch if he'd found out. Most of the foundlings that the magpie adopted were boys under 2. At age 5, Vanna was the only one who'd come to live beneath his wing who remembered her blood family. It had made her wild and precocious, and she'd given the old man a great deal of trouble in those final years before Lee ran. He'd loved her for it. It was she who'd gone hunting for shinies with him up above, she who'd first pricked his mind with transgressive whys and set him on his path toward escape. The first light he noticed was an ever so faint sheen on the tunnel sludge, and with it came a low rumble of many conversations all at once. He picked out snatches of the gutter tongue, and dread twisted in his stomach. Vanna took shape in front of him. The lamplight through her hair made it glow like amber. The twiggy girl he'd known at 13 was a woman grown now, and he felt his mouth go dry again as he stumbled after her. She dropped his hand when they were still a dozen paces out from the king's long hall. She led him in without looking back. The conversation in the cave went silent the moment he stepped inside. A dozen pairs of eyes were trained on him, some curious, some glaring, and a whisper rustled in his wake as he followed Vanna into the middle of the hall. The cave was large and crude, the lamps hanging from hooks and tucked into cracks, throwing uneven shadows across the knobby stone. The city engineers had never gone this deep, and for countless generations before the old man, the cave had gone undisturbed, stalactites gradually creeping their stone fingers toward the cave floor. The magpie had found it and drained it and dammed up the passages that flowed into the cave. And from here, he'd waged his tiny, bitter rebellion against the god of men. It all looked the same as Lee remembered. Some of the faces were different, about a dozen of them in all, most of them around Sim's age or a little older. Lee hardly noticed. From the moment he stepped into the hall, his eyes were fixed on the old man, the magpie, the ragged king, coiled like a serpent on his driftwood throne.
Fundum,
the old man said with approval. His voice was like a whetstone. It made Lee's nape prickle. Vanna was standing next to him. She didn't say anything, but Lee thought he saw a trace of pique in the minute thinning of her lips.
Try as he wants it.
Did he try to run?
Tell him it'd be a bad one.
I told him it would be a bad idea. The magpie eased himself out of his seat.
Well, job.
A dark flush crept up her cheeks, but she didn't say anything. She kept her gaze respectfully downcast as he hobbled down from the big stone slab that formed a kind of dais. The king was like his driftwood throne, ancient and discolored and lashed together with bits of rope. His skin was wrinkled and peeling, and his colorless hair hung lank over his shoulder in one matted lock. His clothes, all silks and furs pinched from merchant stalls by his beloved foundlings, were stained and rotting, and his gnarled fingers glittered with gold. Lee didn't notice the baby until the magpie had drawn in close. It was tucked into the old man's furs, pressed against his bare chest. Lee didn't want to think about where he'd gotten it. He stood there and tried not to squirm under his gaze. The dead eye drooped in its socket, crusted with yellow around the rim, while the good one narrowed as he looked the thief up and down. The rotted stumps of his teeth were bared, and he was wearing a crown.
"You've got nerve, coming back here after what you did,"
the old man growled in the gutter tongue. His breath was worse than the stench in the tunnels.
"You broke my heart, boy."
Lee didn't say anything. His eyes were on the floor. The magpie's gaze was like a brand.
"Have you forgotten how we speak? Did the up above take your tongue?"
"I remember," Lee told him in a small voice. "King."
He chanced to glance up, not daring to let his gaze creep higher than the old man's nose. He thought he saw an approving twitch in his cracked gray lips.
"You can't hide from what you are,"
the magpie agreed. He put his hands on either side of Lee's shoulders. Despite age and ill health, his forearms were strong and braided with muscle.
"My name is carved on your bones, my son."
He pulled Lee into a sudden hug, his joints crackling with the strain. It was like being hugged by a scarecrow with all the stuffing taken out. The thief was in shock. He could hardly believe this reception. It was a moment before he remembered to hug the old man back. Despite being slightly too small for his head, the thin gold circlet the old man wore was pressed deep into his mottled scalp. It raked against the side of Lee's cheek and wounded ear when he withdrew, drawing a wince from the thief. The old man pretended not to notice. He looked at Vanna.
"Has he eaten?"
She bristled.
"I don't..."
"Have you eaten?"
He snapped his fingers, and several of the foundlings scurried forward, holding a roast haunch of some animal, and pressed it into Lee's hand. He looked at the old man, his neck prickling as he pierced him with his dead eye's magic gaze.
"You're all bones,"
the magpie told him.
"Eat first, and then we talk. I want to hear about the up above."
They brought him a rickety stool and set it opposite the driftwood throne. The meat was cold and gristly, but he choked it down anyway, washing it down with chalky bites of stale biscuit and swigs of sour wine. He was waiting for the magpie to spring his trap. In all the years he'd known him, he could count on one hand the number of fits of mercy he'd seen from the old man, and he'd have fingers to spare. Lee wasn't the first foundling who'd left. The ones who did just disappeared. They went up to pinch their scraps from the up above and never came down. Some of them were picked up by greycloaks, he reckoned, and others caught the wrong end of the roving packs of street boys who'd never made it to Paul's. But of the rare ones who chose to leave, there was the even rarer one who tried to come back. The old man dealt with these swiftly and brutally. The king had returned to his seat, and he watched Lee intently at his meal. Too late did it occur to him that he might have poisoned the food, and the last mouthful of cold meat stuck in his throat going down. As if reading his thoughts, the old man grinned.
"If I wanted you dead, I could have let the rain have you."
That hardly reassured him.
"So?"
He'd managed a couple more bites before the old man spoke again.
"Up above."
The up above is...
"Not like that,"
the magpie interjected in the vulgar. Lee blinked. He wasn't sure he'd ever heard him speaking the language of men. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the foundlings trade looks. Vanna was watching him.
"Talk the way they do,"
the old man directed.
"The up above is big,"
Lee answered in the vulgar.
"I'd never seen it in the daylight before. It's big. It's like three cities all mashed together. There's a poor city and a rich city. And the lords live up on the cliff in the Grey Keep."
His eyes touched Vanna's momentarily.
I used to call it Dark House.
The old man waved his hand impatiently.
Tell me about the Sirens.
Again, he blinked. He'd never heard him refer to Cirrus by name before. The gutter word for him was man-god, and the magpie taught his foundlings to hate and fear him almost as much as he did.
They're pious,
he said after taking another moment to think and chew.
And rich, some of them. I've known some people who love the man-god, really follow him, but mostly not.
The old man nodded.
Do they believe?
Lee thought about it. The king's eyes narrowed, and he leaned forward on his throne, so far that the baby nearly spilled out of his furs.
Do you believe?
The thief hesitated. He wasn't sure how to answer. He wasn't altogether sure what the honest answer was. As he stared at the shapeless lump that was the baby tucked against the old man's chest, its scalp red and scaly, he could little believe in a god who allowed a lamprey like the ragged king to cling to the city's underbelly and suck the life from its young. But he knew the answer the old man wanted.
I believe in the man who raised me,
he said in the gutter tongue so that the foundlings could understand,
who rescued me from the street. I believe in the things you taught me about the up above, for now I've seen them for myself. You gave me food I could eat, clothes I could wear, a place I could sleep.
His gaze flicked up a degree to Vanna standing behind the old man. She was staring at him with contempt. All it would take was a word from her about what Lee had said in the tunnel. He shook his head minutely.
Man-god never gave me any of that, he told the king.
The old man's eyes shone with triumph.
Hear that?
He grinned at the other foundlings gathered around. They had crept toward him during his audience with the thief.
Let that be a lesson to you. There is only one god below the...
Baba.
Every head snapped to the voice from the tunnel. The boy who'd emerged from the gloom was lean and shirtless. Beneath the layers of filth, Lee guessed that he was close to his same age.
Orifundum.
We found the other one. He watched the change on the old man's face, a minute thinning of his colorless lips, a slight flaring of his nostrils, a twitch in the muscles of his jaw. The change was slight, barely noticeable, but it chilled Lee to his bones. The king nodded and flicked two ring-studded fingers to beckon the newcomer forward. He came in on his own two feet, Lee was pleased to see, with one of the foundlings in front of him and two behind. The scrap of fabric that he'd tied over his mouth had been pulled up over his eyes, and his hands were bound in front of him with wire. He was caked with filth, again, and dripping blood from the broken scabs on his wrists. As soon as they came through the tunnel, the four foundlings encircled him. One of them stopped the brawler with a hand on his chest. Hatham brushed him off with a growl. They were all around Lee's age. He recognized them from his life before, and carrying crude wooden spears with fire-hardened points. These they leveled at the brawler, a few inches from his chest. Lee shuddered when the old man brushed past him. He left the baby on the driftwood throne. His bare feet made no sound on the stone floor. A whisper in the gutter tongue rustled among the younger foundlings along the wall.
You're a long way from home, stranger.
The king rumbled in the vulgar. The brawler snarled but didn't speak.
It's customary to bow before a king,
said the old man. The magpie flicked his fingers again, and one of the foundlings behind the brawler swung his spear like a baton and cracked Hatham across the back of the head. The reaper staggered but kept his feet. His teeth were bared. At a nod from the old man, the same foundling turned the spear in his hands and stabbed Hatham in the calf, drawing a gasp from the brawler. He went down on both knees.
That's better,
the king murmured. Hatham made a move to stand. The other foundlings moved in with their spears so that he could feel the needle-sharp points grazing his chest and back. He didn't try to rise. The magpie glanced back at Lee.
Is he thick?
He asked, switching to the gutter tongue.
I don't...
Don't lie to me, boy.
The old man waved off his stammering.
How many strangers do you think we get down here? Am I to believe that he just happened to stumble in after you?
He leveled a gnarled finger at the thief's chest.
You're the only reason he's still breathing.
I know him, Lee admitted. He's my friend.
The old man's extended finger trembled. He curled it into a fist. His expression soured.
No, no. You know better, boy. Even after all this time, you know better than to bring a stranger into our home. What else would you do?
He swept a hand out toward the foundlings along the wall.
Would you let him violate your sisters?
No, no, King.
He closed his eyes and dipped his head in submission. His heart was racing.
He means no harm, I promise. All we want is safe passage through the Undercity, that's all.
When he opened his eyes, the old man's face was a handbreadth from his. Lee tried not to flinch away. He was taller than the old man, but in his mind he was a child again. The magpie was 12 feet tall, and the awful gaze from his dead eye felt like spiders crawling over his soft places.
Your promises aren't worth it,
the king whispered.
You gave your back to this family.
But you let me in, Lee pleaded. You called me your son.
The old man sneered. His breath was like a blight.
You fed me, didn't you? You invited me in as a guest. I'm under your protection, and he's under mine.
He nodded to the brawler.
A man's only as good as his word, remember? You taught me that, Baba.
The old man slapped him. The rings on his hand grazed Lee's ear, and lightning flickered across his face. Lee gasped through his teeth, tears springing to his eyes. The king jumped back, wringing his hand.
You lost the right to call me that,
he growled in the vulgar before giving the thief his back.
I'd feed a dog, too,
he added without looking back.
But I'd still wring its neck if it tried to bite.
He advanced on the brawler.
Why did you come through the Undercity?
He barked.
Why not take the ramps?
Haytham didn't respond. The foundlings holding the spears traded looks.
You can answer,
Lee muttered quickly before they could encourage him with their spears. The brawler took a long, slow breath before responding.
I need to get in before dawn. Why? I have a debt to settle.
His enemy is rich and powerful up in the keep,
Lee told the magpie's back.
A friend of the Sirens. If you let him go, he can strike a blow against the man-god.
The old man cocked his head but didn't turn.
Is this true?
The brawler grunted.
We haven't come empty-handed, Lee called. We've brought tribute.
The foundlings along the wall bristled when his hand slipped into his pocket. He pulled out the muddy, rough-cut gemstone he'd taken off the slavers. Now the old man turned, his eyes flashing at the possibility of shinies. He inspected the stone, his gaze flicking between the thief's face and the gem in his palm.
And what about you?
He sounded unimpressed.
Are you here asking for safe passage? Or to come home?
Lee's breath caught.
I'll go where my king sends me,
he heard himself say, hating himself for it.
It could be a boon to you to have a son who lived up above, who knows the city like the lines on his palm. Together we could pile treasures up to the ceiling.
He forced himself to stare into the magpie's eyes, the hairs on his arms prickling.
We need each other.
The ragged king didn't speak for a while. Lee could feel the eyes of all the foundlings on him. He tried not to squirm.
I'll grant him passage,
he said at length. Lee gave a sigh of relief, spluttering thank yous. He almost didn't hear the next part.
But I can't risk that he comes down and brings the gray cloaks back here.
Lee's stomach knotted.
He won't. You have my word.
The old man's grim expression was unmoved. Lee glanced behind him at the brawler.
Tell him, he spat in the vulgar. Tell him, you won't tell anyone.
I can't let him destroy what I've built,
rumbled the king.
The way you've tried.
He looked over his shoulder and muttered,
take his eyes and his tongue.
Haytham, look out!
quickly bellowed as the foundlings came down on him. Aethon threw himself sideways as their spears swished toward him. By some stroke of luck, he didn't run himself through as he rolled out of the way. He lashed out blindly with his feet and swept the legs out from under one of them as the foundling lunged for another stroke. The boy's head bounced against the floor, and he nearly lost his grip on his spear. Already the brawler was springing to his feet, ripping the filthy blindfold down around his neck before wrenching the spear out of the fallen boy's grip. With his wire-bound hands, he could only hold the spear the way you would a sword, and he parried two spear thrusts before smashing the biggest boy, the one who'd stabbed him, across the head like he was felling a tree. The shaft splintered. The foundling went down like his strings had been cut. The baby was squalling. Lee looked back and saw Vanna scooping it off the old man's throne and rushing off to secrete it in a hidden alcove near the back of the cavern. When she came back, her jaw was set and her needle was in her hand. Lee turned back to the brawler. The magpie filled his vision, towering over the thief, his crimson face only a handbreadth away. Lee was rooted to the spot.
"You filthy mongrel,"
the old man snarled, flecks of spittle flying.
"I should have torn you to pieces when I had the chance."
He shoved him. Lee's foot caught the corner of the stone slab on which the throne sat, and he toppled backward. His head cracked against the edge of the king's seat, and his vision flickered. The old man advanced on him with awful purpose as Lee clambered to his feet, using the throne for support. Behind him, the mass of foundlings had backed the brawler into a corner. He was still brandishing a 2-foot length of the broken spear in his bloody fists.
"I never needed you, boy. I made you,"
sneered the king, looming over the thief. He clawed at the tangle of necklaces swinging below his wattled throat.
"You see this?"
He shook one at Lee. It was a star with 7 points for the houses and holds, like the one he'd pinched from Cliffside.
"Samwell pulled this from your own damn sanctuary, right from under your man-god's fat nose."
He touched the golden circlet embedded in his scalp.
"Or this. Sweet Vanna took this off the brow of your governor's own sleeping wife."
He laughed, his voice shrill with mania. He reached for the thief. Lee couldn't stop him.
"My children have done more than you could ever dream."
The old man's rough fingers touched his face. He ran his thumb across the white stripe he'd left along Lee's jawline years ago. His hands slipped down to the sides of his neck, his thumbs curling around Lee's throat.
"You, boy, are no son of mine,"
he hissed. He squeezed. Lee's eyes bulged. The old man was withered but strong, like one of the hardy hinter trees that had survived 100 years of scorching heat, dust storms, and floods. The spell his magic eye had woven over the thief didn't break until Lee was clawing at his throat, gasping for breath. The magpie's grip was iron. He kept talking, but Lee couldn't hear him over the thunder of his pulse in his ears. Black spots danced in front of his eyes. Across the cavern, one of the foundlings, a girl no older than Simon, took a running leap and threw herself at the brawler. Haytham hesitated for half an instant with the jagged chunk of spear. She landed on his chest and bit him in his wounded shoulder. Haytham roared and ripped her off him by her matted hair, but already there were 3 more scrambling to do as she'd done. They stuck to him like clinging briars, clawing at him with their ragged fingernails. He staggered under their shifting weight as the older boys caught his flailing arms and pulled him down. They piled on top of him, the brawler bucking and snarling, but there were just too many of them. He disappeared under the mass of orphans and runaways. The old man's colorless tongue dangled between his cracked lips. He forced Lee backward, pressing him down into the driftwood throne. His grip never slackened. Lee's vision had narrowed to a tiny porthole at the center of the roiling dark. And filling the porthole, the old man's dreadful eye.
"You came into this world worthless and unloved,"
he growled in the gutter tongue.
"I gave you a future, and now I take it from you."
Lee had stopped struggling. His fingers felt thick and fuzzy as he fumbled with his belt.
"Where's the man god to save you, boy?"
The old man looked around, his living eye wild and rolling, as if there might be an angel with fiery sword hovering among the stalactites.
Nowhere. And I'll tell you why.
He pressed his brow hard against Lee's. The barbs of his crown bit into the thief's skin. Lee could hardly feel it.
There is only one god below the city. Are you sure about that?
Lee gasped, touching the edge of his knife to the side of the old man's throat. He fought against his every instinct to sink the blade up under the magpie's jaw and into his fevered brain. The old man hissed and staggered back, a trickle of blood creeping down the side of his neck. Lee snatched him by his furs before he could escape, gasping for breath. The darkness receded from his vision. He curled his fingers into the matted lock of the old man's hair and wrenched his head back.
I'll tell you one thing, Lee whispered, his chest heaving. I take a gutter up above over being the king of rats and shit.
He pressed the knife into the old man's throat. More blood welled around the blade and trickled into his furs. The magpie screeched. The foundlings looked up. Two of them had pried the brawler's mouth open to get at his tongue. Vanna's steel needle was tickling the base of his throat.
Let him go, Lee spat.
No one moved.
Tell them,
he snarled in the old man's ear, pressing harder on the knife.
Let him go,
the magpie repeated, his good eye never leaving the thief's face. It blazed with hate and terror, shining with tears. They climbed off him, and the brawler rose shakily to his feet, heavily favoring his left leg. One of them crept forward with a rust-spotted penny knife and sawed through his wire bracelets. More blood pattered on the ground from the gashes they'd bitten into his wrists.
Run, little rat,
the old man grated.
Run up above and hide in your gutter.
Tears ran slantways down his cheeks, red and milky from the dead eye. They disappeared into the deep canyons of his face.
You think I can't reach you up there?
He cackled again, his apple bouncing up and down against the knife. A shudder ran down Lee's spine.
I will find you, and I will eat your eyes.
The thief bristled.
I'm not afraid of you any—
Lee, we have to go.
Haytham muttered. The foundlings had formed a circle around him just outside of swinging distance, and they were bristling with makeshift weapons. Knives, spades, rocks.
Can you get us out?
Lee bit his lip. Before he could respond, the brawler chose one at random and leveled his splintered chunk of spear. It was Vanna.
You're leading us out.
Lee repeated the order in the gutter tongue. She didn't move. Lee looked meaningfully at the old man and gave a little extra pressure to the knife at his throat.
Do as he says,
the magpie gasped. Her eyes touched Lee's for an instant before she met the old man's gaze and nodded. He thought he saw anger there. Betrayal. Haytham marched her into the tunnel with a hand on her shoulder. He jabbed the fire-hardened spear point in the faces of the foundlings as they crowded behind him.
If anyone follows, she dies first.
They didn't need to speak the vulgar to understand the threat.
Go on, boy,
the old man crooned, his voice echoing after them down the tunnels long after Lee had followed the others into the black.
You can't hide. Those eyes are mine.
Thank you guys so much for listening. It really is a joy to be able to share this whole thing with you. As always, it is a huge help if you leave a like or a comment on the video. And if you're catching this on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you can do me a favor by leaving a 5-star review or just sending it to a friend and saying, hey, this is a cool story. You should check it out. I will catch you next week for the next episode. Same time, same place. I'll see you then.